Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is Bob Knight, who is a veteran journalist. In fact, he used to work with the Los Angeles Times and used to work for Coral Ridge Ministries, which is now called D. James Kennedy's Ministries. And we saw a recent column by Bob Knight in the Washington Times about religious freedom at risk and some positive developments plus the ongoing threat to it. This is Vocal Point, and I'm so glad to have you, Bob, join us again on the program.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jerry.
Sure. Okay, let's talk about religious freedom, and I just want to say one thing at the outset, and I'll let you wax eloquent. You can summarize your column and so forth, but here it is. This is a nation that was founded specifically, explicitly for religious freedom, and yet in our time, we've systematically have been losing it. You know, it seems like every generation gets worse and worse. But go ahead and you talk now about religious freedom at this time.
You're exactly right, Jerry. The founders, it's no accident that the First Amendment first mentions religious freedom. Congress shall make no law establishing religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Everything else flows from that because we're talking about freedom of conscience, the idea that man is under God, not under just government. But we've kind of lost that understanding. And in my column, I talk about how the courts have reinterpreted something Jefferson said back in just at the turn of the century, around 1800, when he wrote a letter to the Danbury Baptist Association, assuring them that he wasn't going to establish a national church that would interfere with their religious freedom. That's been taken out of context. He used the term wall of separation between church and state. And in Emerson versus Board of Education in the 40s, the Supreme Court grabbed that and said, aha, the state can't have anything to do with religion, really. And they have since then made a number of rulings that have made the Constitution hostile to religion instead of protecting it. But the column isn't about how bad things are. Really, it's about how things may be turning. Because I mentioned that the Trump administration ordered the Federal Emergency Management Agency to allow churches to apply for federal aid after several hurricanes, Hurricane Irma and Harvey. They basically said, we reject the recent interpretations that said the government can't be entangled with religion in any respect. Of course, the founders never believed that. They held Christian services in the House of Representatives, and Thomas Jefferson attended them for several years. A lot of this is in your books, Jerry.
You're quite an
accomplished author yourself, and I've drawn heavily from your books. But there's also the appointment of God-fearing justices and constitutionalists like Justice Gorsuch at the Supreme Court, so that gives us hope that they'll reestablish a correct interpretation of the Constitution, which is that the words mean something, that they pretty clear on paper, and that they shouldn't interpret so much that they twist them into other meanings. And finally, there are some cases coming up. The big one, the Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission, in which Christian Baker says, "I'm not going to bake a cake for a gay wedding." Okay, and here's the good thing, Jerry. This isn't actually a religious liberty case. It's about freedom of speech. It's about not being forced to express something against your beliefs. The baker's saying, hey, it's not about the people who order the cake. I've served them before. It has nothing to do with homosexuality. It's that I can't be forced to create something that expresses approval of what God says is wrong. So I'm not going to help a homosexual wedding. That's different from saying I'll never serve homosexuals. None of these bakers, florists, photographers have ever said that.
Right.
They've all said that it's the event, not the person.
That is so true. And in fact, I just love this analogy, and I must credit my friend John Rabe for this. But can you imagine if a black printer was forced, or the government tried to force him against his conscience, to print up with his printing press, flyers for the KKK? That's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about violating the conscience here, and that's what the other side needs to recognize. I appreciate the little plug about the books. Can I ask you this? You did get a copy of Doubting Thomas, I trust, right? The one about Thomas Jefferson's faith?
I don't think I did.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, okay. Note to self. Send Bob Knight a copy of this. That book shows that Jefferson was not a lifelong skeptic. He did, you know, have some serious doubts about, you know, core Christian doctrines later in life, which he expressed privately, number one. But number two, he certainly didn't believe in the separation of God and state the way it's being misinterpreted today, and it explains about the letter. Plus, we have in there two sermons in the appendix that no sermons of the Reverend Charles Clay have ever been in print. In 1777, a year after he wrote the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson helped as a layperson start an evangelical church, which they called an evangelical minister to be the minister. His name is the Reverend Charles Clay. You can read for yourself in the appendix these two sermons. They're gospel preaching. And he even says, we being desirous of gospel preaching. Now, that doesn't mean Jefferson didn't later, start to doubt some serious, important, critical Christian doctrines. I'll have to send that to you. Okay. Forget the commercial.
I look forward to reading it.
Sure. Okay.
Listen, Jerry, yeah. One interesting aspect of this, when I was in Williamsburg, there's a gentleman who plays Jefferson, and he does it to a T, but he's also a student of Jefferson. He's a scholar of Jefferson. And I asked him point blank after one of his performances. I said, look, people claim that Jefferson was a deist at best, maybe even an atheist. And what do you think of that? And he goes, well, he did have doubts in some portions of his life, but near the end, he would be what I would call an Orthodox Christian.
Wow.
In other words.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that the people have misinterpreted him.
Wow.
To make him out to be something he's not.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And in fact, in our book, we show, and this is drawing heavily from the co-author's research, and he's a pastor in Charlottesville, Mark Belisles. But phase one of Jefferson's life, from all outward appearances, an Orthodox Christian. The final phase in his life, when the Episcopal Church reopened in Charlottesville and was available to him, he started attending again on a regular weekly basis. By all outward appearances, could have been an Orthodox Christian. But going back to this whole thing about religious freedom, the irony of Jefferson being cited by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1947 in the Everson case that you cited is that Jefferson wasn't even in the United States when the Constitution was written, and he wasn't participating in Congress when they wrote the First Amendment later on. So why was he the arbiter of, you know, religious liberty versus other founding fathers?
Well, because he was handy.
Yeah.
I think they saw how they could use that phrase,
yeah,
and put it in stone. So wall of separation became what David Barton calls a sword against religious freedom instead of a shield.
Yeah.
The First Amendment has become a sword instead of a shield, all because of that use of that phrase from that letter. It's amazing how much damage it's done.
Yeah. Okay, you're a court watcher, and I don't want to ask you to predict the future or whatever, but based on the court as it's made up now, how do you think they're going to go with the Masterpiece Cake Theater case or whatever? Not theater, but
that's a great question.
Masterpiece Cake.
Yeah, they could go either way, I'm afraid, because it all comes down to Justice Anthony Kennedy.
Mm.
Kennedy, apparently from the questioning, seemed to indicate that the cake shop had merit in not wanting to be forced to do an expression of something they didn't believe in. But Kennedy's also been instrumental in all the other cases,
yep,
that have advanced the homosexual agenda, from Romer v. Evans to Lawrence v. Texas, striking down the sodomy law, right up to the marriage ruling,
yep,
in Obergefell. So he's very fond of promoting the homosexual agenda, and whether that influences him more than the clear constitutional case that the Baker has made remains to be seen.
Yeah. Okay, for those who, let's say, don't agree with Jack Phillips, or they don't agree with Melissa Klein, they don't agree with the 70-year-old florist or whatever from Washington. In other words, they think, oh, bake the darn cake. I mean, I've even heard professing Christians say as such. How is religious liberty at risk if, let's say, Jack Phillips, heaven forbid, lose?
Oh, because it's interesting, because this is freedom of speech has evolved into freedom of expression. Because after all, you can express yourself many ways, not just with speech. You can burn a flag. That's an expressive event. He says he's an artist, Jack Phillips, and that he believes deeply that everything he does either honors God or is at least intended to honor God. So if he's told to do something that's actually against God's law, they're telling him to express something that he didn't want to express. I remember Thomas Jefferson. We can go back to him, Jerry. He said it's sinful and tyrannical to force a man to express an opinion with which he disagrees.
Yeah.
Sinful and tyrannical.
Right.
It's funny how they don't quote that when they're trying to force Christians into being compelled to do that. It's dangerous. If the court comes down and says, we can now make you express something you disagree with, that really does open the door to the government doing all sorts of things to our freedom of speech and freedom of religion. None of them good.
Yeah, and it's so amazing. I remember hearing one time there was a liberal lady that called up a conservative talk show. And the issue at hand, I believe, was the HHS mandate, and the Obama administration was trying to force nuns and others against their conscience to go ahead and, you know, supply abortifacients, abortion-inducing drugs, and so forth. And this lady said, if these people don't like it, they can go and, you know, just find another country and move there or create another country. And I thought, lady, we did create a country. It's called America, the United States of America. And this is a country that the Puritans built. I'm sorry, but it is. Even all the sex scandals of 2017, it's what I call Playboy ethics, Puritan consequences. I mean, the effects of the Puritans are still with us for good in this country.
That's true. Anybody throwing stones at these people who are accused of sexual improprieties are doing so on the basis that there is a moral order, they've violated it, and they deserve public approbation. and they do. They violated the moral code. It's kind of funny that you don't have to be a Puritan, but we were founded as a Christian nation, and any good that's still happening in America, to me, either is directly from that, or people are coasting on the fumes of America's Christian values. People who say, oh, the Bible means nothing to me. In fact, I don't even know if there's a God. Still uphold many biblical beliefs about morality, just because that's the culture we're still in.
Yeah.
And it's the salt that keeps us going.
And the essence of America is that our rights come from God. And that's why this religious freedom case really is so critical, like you're saying.
Yeah, it really is. If government can suddenly turn around and say, well, look, we think it's more important to force you to express yourself in a way we approve of, then that will affect everything out there, from the Internet to Facebook to Twitter, all the ways we're communicating now. It would get scary very quickly. You know, there's evidence Google has already been involved in censoring messages they don't like.
Yeah.
And Facebook also. They've been caught, actually. And I'm hoping they've been chastised enough about freedom and why they need to keep it free so they will decline from doing that. It's worse when the government does it, though.
Yeah.
Although, Jerry, let me raise this.
Sure, and we'll close with this. Go ahead. 20 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we're always saying, well, only the government can censor, but that's not true. And some of these major companies like Google, Facebook, are so huge, they have far more power than the robber barons ever had at the turn of the century, ran railroads and banks. So maybe there might be time for breaking up corporations that big and that influential. They may become a real threat to our freedom.
Wow. Bob Knight, you can read his pieces at Washington Times, WashingtonTimes.com. Thank you, Bob. Always a pleasure.
Okay, thank you, Jerry.